This morning, America's First News starts right after this. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Insulin anxiety. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka on this New Year's Day, January 1, 2020. Thanks for being with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
The price of insulin has nearly doubled the past few years. Hear how financially strapped families are turning to desperate measures to survive.
One of the best teams in college football doesn't point to just a more efficient offense for its success. Hear how it's winning off the field.
The trends that were hot in 2019 that are expected to continue to be trendy in 2020, like a certain diet.
And the booming economy has not lifted everybody. The question is, why not?
When we consider it was a good year for the economy, continued growth, plentiful jobs, and yet there are numerous indications that a lot of people still aren't prospering all that well.
Russ Wiles at the Arizona Republic on questions to ask yourself to see how you fared financially in 2019. Mindy Patterson's family pays nearly $1,000 each month for insulin. Her husband and two teenage sons all have type 1 diabetes and need insulin to survive. But the medicine they so desperately depend on comes at a hefty price. The family pays between $300 and $400 per person in out-of-pocket costs on insulin each month. Now, in people with type 1 diabetes, the pancreas can't make insulin. Those with the condition require several doses of insulin per day. And by one measure, that cost is up nearly 100% the past 7 years. Costs continue to rise, so much so that almost half of people with diabetes have temporarily skipped taking their insulin. It's a story by Megan Henry, healthcare reporter at the Columbus Dispatch in Ohio. Megan, what have you uncovered?
Diabetes affects millions of people in the U.S., and people with type 1 diabetes spent $5,705 per person on insulin in 2016, according to the nonprofit Healthcare Cost Institute. And insulin is vital for people with diabetes, especially people with type 1 diabetes, since their pancreas doesn't make insulin, which we need. And that price, almost $6,000, that's 99% increase since 2012, so that doubles, putting a tremendous strain on people with diabetes who require this insulin. I talked to a family from Dayton, Ohio, and their family pays nearly $1,000 for insulin each month, since three people in their household need insulin. They're all type 1 diabetics, and so without this, they would not survive. And so they spend upwards of, you know, $12,000 a year on insulin.
Boy, as the mom in that story pointed out to you, too, when she's 49, right, as a job at Costco that helps with health insurance, if she loses that job or there's some other financial emergency, they're in a lot of trouble.
Right. She said that one time she ran the numbers, and if they didn't have insurance, it would cost about $5,000 a month for the three of them to be able to afford the insulin.
Man. Why is it that prices have spiked so much the last few years?
That's a good question. It's hard to point exactly one finger at this issue, but it seems to be just a mix of the three drug makers who make the insulin, Sanofi, Novo Nordisk, or Eli Lilly, as well as the pharmaceutical benefit managers and the health insurance companies, and also just increasing out-of-pocket prices just seem to be all kind of mixing into this pot of raising insulin prices.
And there's one theme that seems to come up with a lot of these stories, as you know, more than most, the idea of a lack of transparency, like nobody can really figure out what's going on, right? Nobody necessarily pays the retail price, but once the pharmacy benefit managers get involved with the drug companies and the health insurance companies, the consumer is just kind of left to shrug shoulders and empty a wallet.
Right, exactly.
All right, so where does this go from here? I mean, is there any relief in sight for some of these people who have to pay this much out of pocket?
Hopefully there's some relief coming down the pike. In Ohio, State Representative Dr. Beth Litson, a Democrat, introduced a package of bills about a month ago focused on insulin pricing. One of those bills would cap the price of insulin provided by health care plans at $100 for a 30-day supply here in Ohio. That bill was recently introduced, so there hasn't been much movement on it, so it takes some time to see that come to fruition. But if that bill would pass, that would help out families like the Pattersons in the story. And there also is a House bill that she also introduced that would require the Attorney General here in Ohio to give recommendations about insulin pricing in the state and just investigate why is this so expensive for families. So hopefully there's some relief in sight. It's kind of hard to say, though.
Yeah. We're speaking with Megan Henry, healthcare reporter at the Columbus Dispatch, part of the USA Today network. She's written a fascinating piece entitled Insulin Prices Double, Causing Many People with Diabetes to Turn to Extremes. So you point out, too, there's another family who they feel one of their lost loved ones was actually rationing the insulin to try to, you know, afford it and pay the bills.
Yes, yes. So Patterson, her sister-in-law, Megan Carter, whose brother actually has insulin, is a diabetic as well. She was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes in 2000. She had some brushes with diabetic ketoacidosis, a condition in which blood sugars get too high and the body's blood sugar becomes acidic a couple times. And then at that point, she started rationing on and off just to prolong her supply of insulin. Unfortunately, then she lost her job as a nurse in June of last year and her health insurance along with it. So she was paying nearly $1,000 for three little vials of insulin to last her like a month. And so on Christmas Eve about a year ago, she started throwing up and showing symptoms of diabetic ketoacidosis and then ended up basically dying from complications related to diabetes because she was just rationing her insulin as a way to try to prolong her supply. So this family in Dayton is really gung-ho about lowering the prices so it doesn't happen again.
Understandably, rationing insulin. Wow. Megan Henry, healthcare reporter at the Columbus Dispatch. Thanks for being with us. Happy New Year. Hope the music's not too loud this morning, if you know what I mean. If you'll be making New Year's resolutions for 2020, they might include things like lose weight, get out of debt, save more money, spend more time with the family. But you may not be able to accomplish those things if you don't make other commitments first. We're joined now by Kevin McHugh, president of JKM Management Development and host of a podcast called Sheer Clarity. He's an executive coach with a New Year's list you can apply to work and home. Kevin, you recommend being more vulnerable. How?
Well, you got to understand the definition of what it means in the context of business. It means you're more open than you're used to being, but in a particular category. Basically, you're open about what you're not good at, what you don't know. People are afraid of showing what they think is weakness, and that's what vulnerability is originally perceived as. And it's actually not. There's a great author out there who's been around for a long time and very popular. Her name is Brené Brown, and she's sort of the pioneer on this. And she found out that most people are disconnected, and at some level it's because they're hiding. They're not being honest. They're not being truthful, and they're not being honest about the stuff that makes them vulnerable, which is, I'm afraid of this. I don't understand that. I wish I knew more. And if you get an executive who is never allowing themselves to sort of be felt, seen, and heard at a heart level, a la more vulnerable, people have a hard time connecting with you. And if they can't connect, they can't trust you.
Right. I was going to say, what's it do for you then if you work on this of being more vulnerable?
Absolutely, positively opens you up to being much more attractive to other people. Because that's how people connect. People connect at the heart, first and foremost. Everybody's got a radar, right? The moment you encounter each other, you encounter me, I encounter you, we have an inside scanner, and the scanner is making a decision. Should I trust this guy? Seem like a good guy. And vulnerability, being open, transparent, and, you know, just okay with not being perfect, that is highly attractive to other people. And it invites them to do the same thing.
Yeah.
So now if I've got a team working together, and people are totally safe, unafraid, the trust that the other people have their best interest in mind, when you go to attack a problem or create a new solution or innovate something, it just flows. The energy is wide open. But when people are in a protective mode, a la, don't be vulnerable, you don't get the best quality.
What do you mean by be more conscious of the power of trust?
Well, in a nutshell, it's really about do you have in the top of your mind the power of A, trusting others and what it means to trust them and how powerful that is, and if you don't trust somebody, how much it causes you to shut down. And you also have to be conscious that as a leader, one of the branding items I want is I want people to say, I trust that guy.
Yeah.
So if but people aren't actually, the word conscious means I'm literally working on, care about, and want to be known as a person you can trust. And so if you're not conscious, you just go through the day, guess what happens? You have transactions with people which are just transactional. So, you know, leaders, here's the problem. Everybody is so freaking busy, wired, intense, getting stuff done, that the actual consciousness of, hey, I'm here with another human, what do they think of me? Do they trust me? I actually have executives just point blank look at each other and say, do you trust me?
We're speaking with Kevin McHugh. He is the president of JKM Management Development in Ohio, also host of a podcast called Sheer Clarity. He's put together a list of New Year's resolutions that you can apply to both home and work. Finish up with being committed to a better work-life balance, because it's something everybody talks about or wants to do, but how do you actually do it?
This is a tough one. The answer is simple and very hard to apply. What will you say no to in order to balance your life? For the most part, in the executive world, it's out of balance because they're working so much. So many hours committed. The devices are like 24/7, right? So even if somebody uses the phone as an alarm clock to lay it down on the table beside the bed, and if they see the light go on at 3 a.m., they happen to be awake, they pick it up. And they start, that's not balance. Turn the phone off. Say no to your phone. Say no to being available so that instead of people being able to reach you at 24/7, they can't reach you at certain times.
Thanks, Kevin. Kevin McHugh, president of JKM Management Development. Again, the podcast is called Sheer Clarity. It's 21 minutes after the hour on this morning. In college football, Louisiana State won the SEC championship and qualified for the playoffs due in large part to its new-look offense, anchored by Heisman-winning quarterback Joe Burrow's devastating efficiency and an unstoppable run game. But sports reporter Lane Higgins at the Wall Street Journal says LSU's success may also be partly owed to a technological advance in the weight room arms race that has gripped college football in recent years. Lane, what do they have there in Baton Rouge?
LSU has for a long time been one of the most innovative strength and conditioning programs in the country, largely due to its coach, Tommy Moffitt. And he has said multiple times in the course of me speaking to him and also over the years that he is someone who always is looking for a way to get an edge or try new technology. And they use a lot of different technology, from heart rate monitors to something called force plates that measure how you jump, and other things in their weight room. And they had been using a system that tracked how fast you lift a barbell on various movements like squatting and deadlifting and bench press, and analyzing the speed in addition to the reps and the weight on the bar is a way for coaches to say, like, oh, you know, maybe you're a little broken down and tired this week and we don't want to have you get hurt, so we'll ease up a little bit, or, you know, oh, you're not lifting enough, we can make you stronger, add weight. So they had a pretty long history of doing innovative things, and in the last offseason, they were approached by a fitness startup called Perch, which is essentially a digitized version of the technology that they had been using to enable this velocity-based training. And it's the old system was very clunky. There was lots of wires involved that fell off. And the consensus was that no one really liked to use it, okay, even though it was a necessary evil, yeah, perhaps. And this new technology is pretty slick. It's sort of like a video game to a lot of these players. They just go in and punch in their weight and the reps, and they'll do the lift, and the data spits out immediately on an iPad next to them, and the players are looking around, comparing to each other. So it's been a huge morale boost, but it's also just made, you know, the workouts more efficient and better. So, as you know, in theory, in football and in any sport, if you are doing better work in strength and conditioning, that's going to show up on the field. And obviously LSU is doing a lot of things right this year. Yeah. One of the things that they've really done right this year is the work in the weight room.
We're speaking with Lane Higgins, sports reporter at the Wall Street Journal. She's written a piece entitled LSU is winning the weight room arms race with real-time data. And they've started using this program from a company called Perch. So, not trying to oversimplify this technology, but if it notices that you're quick with a barbell, that means you can necessarily lift more or a heavier weight?
It depends. So the system is a little bit complicated in terms of how the coaches use it. But say we're bench pressing 100 pounds and your coach wants you to do 10 reps. They would, in a traditional setting, that's all they would say. With velocity-based training, they would also say, and we want you to move the bar at 0.86 meters per second. And then you go through your reps and the data would spit out in the, or the sensors would look and track how fast you're moving it. So if you're moving it at 0.66 meters per second, the coach may say, hey, you know, that's a little bit too heavy. Why don't you take some reps off so that way your form doesn't deteriorate and you're getting better quality movement. Likewise, if you're moving it way faster, then the coach might say, hey, you know, let's challenge you a little bit more. Because previously, there's kind of this element of like machismo that's in a weight room where, you know, oh, I got to lift as much as the guy next to me. Like, I want to make sure that I'm better. But that can often lead to injuries of people getting hurt or people sacking off and not really admitting to it. So it just basically means that you can individualize these workouts and tailor it to a player. So say you have a player that, you know, recently broke a collarbone and has a little bit of atrophy in their pectoral muscle when they're bench pressing. Yeah, they should probably go lighter at first, and the coach might not know what to prescribe them, but having the speed data and the velocity data will help them better figure out what the player's baseline should be when they're recovering.
Nice, Lane. Lane Higgins, sports reporter at the Wall Street Journal. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business, but you don't have to take our word for it. Take Evan Lyles, CEO of Roush Enterprises, instead.
For the people that are involved in product development, there couldn't be more unique and exciting opportunities that are really going to shape the future of the world. It's a really exciting time to be in Michigan.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Hey, Happy New Year. January 1, Wednesday, 2020. Glad you're with us. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka. Coming up this half hour, how to determine if you had a good financial 2019. Also, the top videos of 2019 and trends for 2020. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. A New York City company, which operates on a 100% zero-waste basis, has become a role model for other businesses that want to reduce the world's garbage. Here's this morning's Jennifer Koshenka.
You can blame the government or blame big business, but when it comes to producing too much waste, you might want to take a look at yourself. That's the approach taken by a Brooklyn company called Package Free. Ann Cadet of the Wall Street Journal has written a profile about this firm and joins us now. Ann, exactly what does Package Free do?
Well, on one level, they're a retailer. They have a website and they have a store in Bloomsburg, Brooklyn, and it all looks pretty normal from the outside. They sell a lot of kind of eco-conscious products like biodegradable iPhone cases and metal straws. But what really makes them stand out is the founder, Lauren Singer, says that since the business launched about 2 years ago, it has not generated one single scrap of trash.
How in the world have they been able to do that?
Well, a lot of it's recycling. So it's not like they don't generate any waste, but it's all recycled. So they actually have a composting service that comes right to their office to like pick up the banana peels. And, you know, when the occasional piece of plastic comes in, they have a special recycler that will take plastic so other recycling companies won't. But they don't have a garbage hauler because they don't generate any trash that actually goes into a landfill. And it's not easy. They have, not only do they have a pretty good sized staff, they have about 40 people and there's about 15 people in an office. And then they have a warehouse where they send out all the online shipping stuff, and then they have their store. So there's a lot of little pieces, but some examples of how they eliminate waste or trash is all the boxes that all of their products come into the warehouse, they actually reuse those boxes to send the products back out to customers, and they reuse all the wrapping paper and the packing paper to send stuff back to the customers. In their office, they don't have a copy machine. They don't have any printers. They don't use any paper. Everything is done online, digital. And the interesting part is this actually saves them some money because they don't have to pay for printers. They don't have to pay for copy machines. They don't have to pay for garbage hauling, which costs most businesses in New York City, even small ones, a couple hundred dollars a week. All the shipping supplies, she said, would typically cost her, you know, thousands of dollars a year. She says they've actually come out ahead on going zero waste rather than spending money to sort of indulge in being a good citizen.
We're speaking with Ann Cadet of the Wall Street Journal. And some of those things sound like they would be fairly easy to accomplish, mm-hmm. but some of them don't sound easy. How have the employees been able to adjust?
They told me it when they first come in, it's weird. They're like, where's the trash can? How can you have an office without a trash can? And they're pretty strict when employees come and join the firm. They're issued a metal lunchbox and a thermos and a water bottle so that they don't, you know, bring in any trash to the office when they bring in their lunch. And there's a list of approved lunch spots that don't, you know, deliver food in plastic containers. But I have to say, anyone who goes to work for this company, they're already big environmentalists. They already care about this stuff. So I got the impression that most of them are pretty happy to, you know, spend a little extra time to do things the zero waste way. I think a lot of them aren't really thrilled about washing dishes in the sink down the hall, but I think they feel these are sort of minor considerations. And a lot like the founder, Lauren Singer, they feel like if you are going to expect other people to care about the environment, you have to start with yourself.
That's this morning's Jennifer Koschenko with Wall Street Journal columnist Ann Cadet. 21 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us and Happy New Year. The paradox of the current 10-year economic expansion is that so many people haven't seen much financial progress despite a generally favorable backdrop. Jobs are plentiful, right? But many people aren't enjoying higher incomes. Other Americans engage in poor financial behaviors that make increased affluence elusive. Russ Wiles, personal finance columnist at the Arizona Republic, has some gauges that might indicate whether you have made financial progress over the past year. Russ, how should we look at it?
The obvious way to look at one, of course, is the obvious way is to look at, you know, at your income. But I don't think that shows the full story. I think you have to compare that to what you spent. Did you keep debts under control? So looking at your overall net worth, they did improve. J.P. Morgan, for example, estimates the typical American household had a net worth, assets less liabilities, of about $110,000. So, I mean, did your net worth improve over the year? I think that's the real bottom line indicator, you know, to assess your financial progress.
Yeah, almost like a company, right?
Exactly.
Basically, yeah. You said, too, did you keep personal ties separate from money matters? Explain that one.
Bankrate.com did an interesting survey where they found that 46% of adults who lent money to friends or relatives said they either lost it or suffered a damaged personal relationship as a result. So I thought this was an interesting one. I mean, we all want to help struggling friends or family members, but sometimes maybe that's not the best, you know, practice to do. It could be, you know, giving money or co-signing on loans. Some of these behaviors do, you know, backfire. And, you know, I think that's one way to another way to assess whether you made progress. Did you kind of keep an arm's length relationship with some of these people? And there may be some other ways to really help someone other than giving them a direct gift, such as helping them learn about financial literacy, helping them get to the bottom of why they are having financial problems, helping them guide through a loan application or helping them network for jobs. But I think just giving money, you know, straight out as a gift can be a problem.
Yeah. We're speaking with Russ Wiles, personal finance columnist at the Arizona Republic, part of the USA Today network. He's written a piece entitled "The Economy Isn't Lifting Everyone. How did you do in 2019? What was your point, too, about you had an uneventful tax filing season?
Well, this is, you know, and this is maybe topical now that the tax filing season will be starting up in earnest in 3 or 4 weeks. But, you know, most people, when they look at their tax filing situation, if they're getting a big refund, they give themselves a pat on the back. But really, that's just giving a free loan to an interest-free interest-free loan to the government for the year. So usually most financial experts would recommend not, you know, you don't want to pay a lot come tax time, but you also don't necessarily want to get a big refund because that's kind of, you know, money that you could have used, you know, during the year. So that's just another one. If you had a relatively small refund or a relatively small payment, I would think that's fairly, you know, a good sign, actually. And the IRS does have a tax withholding estimator that you can use to figure out, you know, just exactly how much you should be withholding from wages, because that's usually what, you know, gets people in trouble.
Yeah. So back up for just a second. If you personally, say, are not doing better now in this economy, when are you going to do better?
Well, exactly. And that's I think, the scary thing, because we have had 10 years of recovery, and the unemployment rate hasn't been this low hardly ever. And yet people are still struggling. Debts, for example, are still high. So, you know, this is the time to make the improvement, I think.
Thanks, Russ. Russ Wiles, personal finance columnist at the Arizona Republic. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Patty Poppes, president and CEO of Consumers Energy, instead.
All of the innovation that's occurring around robotics, AI, it's happening here in Michigan. We have chemical companies, we have pharmaceutical companies, we have medical device manufacturers. Michigan is a magnet for innovators and dreamers.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
Thanks for being with us. Happy New Year. YouTube is out with its annual Rewind list of the top trending videos that had people in the U.S. talking. How about this stat? People are watching over 1 billion hours of YouTube content per year. And they're not just watching them, too. They're remixing them, sharing them, creating parodies, building communities. We're joined now by Madeline Buxton, YouTube trends expert. Madeline, how do you measure which videos are best?
So we definitely look at views, but we know that audiences are engaging with videos in ways that go beyond just watching them. So we also look at likes, we look at comments, we look at shares. It's a lot of factors that go into putting together these lists.
All right, so take us through a couple of these, the top five, say, most popular videos of 2019.
Sure thing. So Rewind, to start off, is our annual look back at the biggest trends and videos from the past year in pop culture on YouTube. So our top five trending videos in the U.S., starting at number five, we have a short film from Gillette called We Believe the Best Men Can Be.
Bullying.
The Me Too movement against sexual harassment.
Toxic masculinity.
Is this the best a man can get?
This kicked off a debate around masculinity, and it showed us that a lot of videos trend not just because people like to watch them, but they also want to talk about them and debate them. Then we had a challenge video from a creator named Mr. Beast.
Hey, Mr. Beast here. Today we're going to buy every item in this store.
He's one of YouTube's biggest rising stars. He's gotten over 25 million subscribers in just 2 years. In this video, he went into a store, bought everything, and donated it to a homeless shelter. Then we had an hour-long documentary investigation from a creator named Shane Dawson. He's been popular on YouTube since 2008. But has seen a huge resurgence this past year thanks to his new documentary format. Then we had an interview show called Hot Ones. This is one of my favorites. It's a series where celebrities answer tough questions while eating really spicy wings. In this episode, they talked to Gordon Ramsay, who is one of their most requested guests since they started the show in 2015.
Grapefruit in a hot sauce?
Senator.
Are you serious?
And finally, our number one top trending video of the year in the U.S., was No More Lies. This was a video from James Charles, one of the beauty community's biggest stars, and it was part of a public back and forth with another beauty creator that became major front page celebrity news.
About what?
He was addressing some allegations that had been made, and they were going back and forth, some drama in the beauty community.
Got it. All right, so for the We Believe from Gillette, what was it about that one that seemed to resonate with viewers?
I think it was really, you know, people saw that they were putting forward a very specific point of view, and we see people coming to YouTube and watching videos and debating them and engaging with them and having conversations about them. And this was because of that strong point of view, people had a lot of things to say about it.
Finish up with Gordon Ramsay. With videos like this, do we just like these type of videos because, say, he's well known, he's a character, obviously his uses very salty language to describe the hot wings that he's eating.
He does. I think, you know, with this show in particular, it's really taken the traditional interview format in a new direction and shown how you can combine food with talking to celebrities in a way that we haven't really seen in other places. So I think it was a combination of the star factor plus people just really loving the format.
Thanks, Madeline. Madeline Buxton, YouTube trends expert. It's 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Some of the experiences, diets, and products that saw the biggest uptick in dollars spent in 2019 are likely to keep their momentum next year, according to Square, the payment systems company that handles millions of transactions. USA Today has a look at some of the favorite items we committed to that could keep momentum in 2020. Keto, the diet that says yes to fat and no to carbs, surged with a 261% spike in sales. Also, axe throwing, the sport that involves aiming a hatchet, saw sales surge 317% last year. Also, hard seltzer, after experiencing a 500% spike in sales, it's likely to remain a staple in bars and cafes. Also, dad sneakers, the thick-soled footwear, thanks to celebrity influencers like Bella Hadid, sent sales higher by 135% in 2019. And leopard, whether it's splashed on boots, skirts, or leggings, the spotted print remains a perennial favorite, with sales soaring 160% in 2019. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Happy New Year. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.